Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Amber and I are going to talk with Mashable's Pete Pachal all about Twitter and Facebook and the future of these services and where they're going. Plus, a whole lot more up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur,
episode 173,
recorded Thursday, July 31st, 2014. Help support Twit with your Amazon purchases. Visit twit.tv/Amazon, click on the Amazon banner, and shop as usual. That's twit.tv/Amazon, and we thank you for your support.
Welcome to The Social Hour. I'm Amber MacArthur, and Sarah will be joining us in just a few minutes. To start off the show, we have a guest today who I actually went to journalism school with, and he is now the tech editor at Mashable. Thanks so much for joining us today, Pete.
No problem. Happy to be here.
It's great to see you. So we want to talk about Twitter today and the recent earnings report from Twitter, which was very positive. A lot of people surprised about this. What did you think?
Yeah, it was a bit surprising. They beat all the expectations. What wasn't surprising to me was that all the analysts were wrong, because analysts tend to be wrong. It's just that, you know, they were wrong very strongly in one direction, which was a bit of a surprise. But Twitter, you know, the reports of its death being greatly exaggerated, all that stuff, I totally agree with. And here's one thing about Twitter that I think a lot of people get wrong. It's that the temptation to compare it to Facebook is so great that you want to judge it on the same metrics, that basically you're thinking, okay, well, what are the monthly active users? How much stuff are they liking, sharing on the network, favoriting, or what have you? But really, Twitter, from the very beginning, has always been a very different animal because it's essentially a broadcast medium. So really, the old school metrics of judging media companies, whether they're page views or unique visitors or what have you, really apply much more strongly to Twitter than Facebook, because it has a gigantic, you know, lurker base. You know, these people who don't have an account, who basically just browse people's profiles, look to it for breaking news, but don't actually actively participate in the conversation. So I really believe Dick Costolo when he says their reach is far greater than the metrics they're showing, and you know they're supposedly working on metrics that will show that. Beyond just showing like page views and what have you. I don't know why those aren't ready yet. I mean, I don't think how it's that hard to sort of figure out who's looking at your site.
And, one would hope it wasn't.
Many embeds they have on other sites and all that stuff. But to do it in a way that's useful and can sort of translate into advertiser dollars at some point, I guess, is a bit of a project. But I hope by the next earnings report, we're going to have something like that.
Well, we've heard some reports over the past year about a decrease as far as monthly users. However, in this recent report, the one we have here from Mashable, it talks about an increase in monthly users. In the Mashable article, they mentioned that perhaps that was because of all the attention that Twitter got during the World Cup. Do you have any other thoughts in your head in terms of why you think there has been an increase in monthly usage?
Well, Costolo actually, I think, went out of his way to say it was that the World Cup didn't actually increase their user numbers. That increased engagement. And that was they were very excited about that because that, I think, drives a lot of their product. But the active users is a bit of a mystery because he didn't say exactly why their active users went up so big. But I suspect, honestly, it's because Twitter, and this is sort of normal for them, whenever there's something going on in the world, whatever it is, like whether it's the recent plane crashes or, you know, it doesn't always have to be negative, but when there's a major world event in a place that is kind of new, that maybe hasn't been in the news, you suddenly realize, a lot of people in that region, I think, suddenly realize Twitter is the fastest and probably most reliable way to get news out, to connect with an audience, to have something go viral, so to speak. And this just keeps happening more and more. So, I mean, you know, any news is good news for Twitter. Certainly recently it's been a lot of negative news, but I mean, in terms of strengthening its platform, you know, it can only help.
You know, one of the things that's kind of interesting, just based on a Forbes article that I was reading that talked about the different audiences with Twitter. And to your point, you know, they talk about the logged out unique visitors to Twitter profile pages. They call them the secondary audience of Twitter. They have a tertiary audience of Twitter. They say these are syndicated viewers who see tweets embedded on third party websites, projected on TV screens. So maybe you could talk a little bit about this idea that, you know, Twitter really is everywhere around us. I mean, that is in contrast to something like Facebook, which is a little more personal. I mean, it changes the game for them, I think, long term.
Yeah, I mean, with Twitter, it's one of these services where it's the first one out to give this kind of product, and it's the last one. I mean, you can't really replicate the product now. I mean, if you have a thought on anything and you want to share it with the world, well, I mean, what else are you going to use? You know, I mean, you could use Facebook or, you know, whatever and use a public post, but I mean, it's just not really designed in the first place for that kind of activity. Twitter is. So, you know, with all the gloom and doom around, you know, around the previous earnings report of Twitter, I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, maybe it has a finite growth in terms of active users that can never match Facebook. But really, what other service is going to provide what Twitter provides? Now, in terms of stuff like the embedded tweets and the stuff you mentioned, sort of seeing tweets on television, that I think is something they're definitely not taking advantage of, and they need to be extremely careful about that. Because, you know, I joked in our news meeting the other day, well, look out, the lower third ad in your embedded tweet is coming. You know, I mean, you know, how would you do it? I mean, I'm sure they're thinking about it, and they're having meetings and testing stuff all the time. But I mean, you know, they're obviously much smarter than me if they can figure out a way to put an ad in a tweet on that's being shown on television and somehow monetize that. So, you know, there's a big struggle here. You know, they'll figure it out. But I mean, again, Twitter, its reach and maybe its even potential for revenue may never quite equal Facebook's, but it's not going away.
Pete, Sarah and I have talked before about Twitter as far as the technology, and pondered the question, you know, is Twitter an innovative company? Because you look at Facebook and other companies who are developing new technologies all the time, but Twitter seems a little stagnant in some ways. Do you see it like that?
You know, a little bit. And I think it's because I think Facebook has passed a hump and sort of proving its vitality. Like, it's kind of running on its own. It's profitable. It's shown a very, as sort of influential and big as it is, it's shown a very, it's very adept at pivoting. It's pivoted toward mobile, and, you know, most of its revenue comes from that area now. So Twitter, I feel like, still has a lot to prove. You know, how big can you get? How quickly can you grow? What exactly can you monetize in your network? I feel like they're still figuring that out. And while there is some innovation in with that, that's hand in hand with that, the completely different sort of product kind of thing, I think that's, you know, it's if Costolo and the others are smart, it's on their roadmap. But I feel that's a little further out for them.
You know, it's funny. Twitter has obviously grown so much, as you guys have been discussing. And I really feel like it's that household name social network. Facebook, absolutely. But when it comes to musicians and celebrities, and everybody's got a Twitter account, and you've got all these followers, and yet we keep hearing about how Twitter wants to move to something that more closely resembles a Facebook news feed, where there's an algorithm, and you don't miss all of these tweets, this sort of fire hose of tweets. But that's what Twitter was built on. And I wonder, can the company innovate and maybe closely resemble Facebook, because Facebook's making a ton of money, and obviously that's what Twitter wants to do? It would alienate me, but I wonder how many people feel the same way. I mean, I've been on Twitter a long time. So what do you think, Pete? I mean, does Twitter care so much about those core people that made it what it is, or is it just time to move on?
No, I think it very much does, and I think it sort of has figured out some of the you know, things it could bump up against to, has a good sense of what how much its audience will tolerate. Now, the one example I go back to, and this is a few years old now, but it's the Twitter mobile trending bar, which I think was derisively called the Dick Bar after Dick Costolo. And that was a very clumsy way of sort of an indirect way of monetizing the platform a little bit, sort of getting people into these topics on a mobile screen, that it just didn't work for a bunch of reasons. And I think that that really seared them, honestly. And since then, they have not stumbled quite so badly, quite so publicly in a product. And I think, you know, some of the turnover at the top has to do with that, although most of that's a little more recent. But it's, you know, they're very careful about their audience. And I'm not sure if going, you know, I hear about that newsfeed stuff too. I think there's a reason they haven't done it. I don't think it's really that necessary. And, I think you nailed it in that it was never really built to do that. Really, big relevant tweets you're going to hear about, you know, whether you see them in your feed or not. So, you know, they have, you know, different things like lists or whatever to get your very niche group kind of stuff if you really want to tune into that. But, I mean, if I miss something that Chris Brown said, you know, I'm going to hear about it from somebody, you know, and that tweet's going to be embedded somewhere. And, you know, so if there's a big relevant conversation on Twitter, there are other, it's by the nature of the medium, I mean, you're kind of going to hear about it one way or another, even though I'm like following 1,000 people and there's absolutely no way I could see even like 5 or 10% of those tweets.
Like Sharknado.
Like Sharknado. Well, that's a, see, this is, and again, for live events, I mean, whether it's TV or an inauguration or an award show or whatever, I mean, are you going to use Facebook? I mean, you know, we kind of do these articles on Mashable and like, who won the World Cup, Twitter or Facebook? And, you know, almost always it's Twitter, you know? I mean, like, everyone was on Twitter doing this stuff. Facebook does, you know, it's a different animal for different kinds of conversations, but in terms of the thing that's holding your attention, I mean, you're on Twitter. I mean, Sharknado, I mean, boom, last night. Like, I was tweeting, like, honestly, I was missing half the action because I was, like, I'm not really missing the act. Like, I was missing the on-screen action. The action was on Twitter. Twitter was, like, the movie, you know? I would, that was more fun. I go back to what else are you going to use?
That sort of real-time participation is what makes Facebook weird for events like that because Facebook is like, oh, Sarah really cares about what Amber has to say, so Amber's going to float up at the top. But, you know, maybe Sarah and Pete don't converse that much on Facebook, so Pete's talking about the same thing that Sarah's talking about, but I might not see that until tomorrow. So it's the sort of thing where it doesn't work at all for real-time events, at least my Facebook news feed.
Yeah, and Facebook certainly has a value. I mean, you know, it's a different thing. I mean, it's, you know, the social graph, and you have all your friends, and you kind of want to hear what they say, and you know who's clever and who isn't, and you're kind of watching for those patterns of and comments to come in every kind of major thing in, you know, that's coming in. It's a different interaction, which has its value, and there's probably more engagement on individual things, and that has obviously more potential for revenue, as we certainly see in their earnings. But it's, you know, that capturing the zeitgeist. I mean, Twitter has it. They're trying to package it and bottle it in different ways. Some of it's working, some of it's not. I would say most of the stuff they're doing, like Amplify, for example, their product for sort of that instant sharing of instant replays by big brands like ESPN, I'd say that's kind of working pretty well. And their attempts to sort of extend that, I think we're going to see more of it, but in a very careful kind of way.
Last question from me, in terms of Twitter and talking about new products, just would love to get your feedback on Vine, because that's another thing we've talked about a lot in the show. And obviously Vine is massive for a pretty big community right now. But for the average person, I'm not so sure that Vine has really caught on. What is your view, or what's the view around the Mashable office towards Vine? Is it here to stay?
It's here to stay. It's wonderful. I love Vine. I use it. We use it all the time. But Vine has kind of, it's kind of become its own worst enemy in some ways. Because it's such a great, really simple, creative tool. And so many people are doing amazing Vines. But to do an amazing Vine takes so much time and effort. I mean, it's a 6-second video, but you should see some of the Vines that our community team does here. They'll set it up over a week. You know, several days to get that perfect 6-second video. And they're great projects, but I think because it's kind of become this place for these creative small films, it's kind of intimidated the mainstream user out of it. I don't think mainstream user sees a lot of use out of it unless they really have sort of a vision, a way to tell a story. If you're going to just want to share a video, you're basically going to either throw it up on YouTube or Facebook. I believe, you know, Vine, it's like this, it's not really a video sharing platform, even if that's maybe what they thought it would be with the start. It's this, you know, short film creation platform. And if you don't have the time or the skills to do those films, you're basically going to be a lurker on them, and you can appreciate them, but you're not really going to participate.
Well, and that, you know, the same goes for YouTube stars and people who put a lot of effort into YouTube videos and post things regularly. Vine has always kind of seemed like the 6-second version of somebody who has a lot of fans on YouTube. Although I think, you know, you mentioned that Vine isn't, you know, for everybody, but it's, I feel like Twitter has the same problem, really. You've got people, I hear this all the time from, you know, audience members of Twit. Well, I don't really have any Twitter followers, and I don't really know how to get them. And I think for a lot of people, once you get sort of stagnant, you don't really understand why you should be using this tool because nobody's listening.
Well, I'd say, I think there's the analogy is a little flawed. I think it's tempting to sort of make the comparison. But with tweeting, I think it's, you know, really, you only have to read some of the basic tip posts that I think all of us have probably written on, like, why no one's, you know, following you and some basic rules on tweeting. And you can sort of, you know, it's a basic training that you get. Oh, so this is how you sort of be successful on Twitter. I get it. And it's not really a lot. The learning curve on Vine, I think, is much steeper. To do amazing Vines, you really need to put in a lot of time and effort, because it's not just, you know, something hits you and it's a great 140 character thing and boom, suddenly you get a lot of retweets and followers. To do an amazing Vine, you simply can't just crank it out, unless you're capturing lightning in a bottle, unless, you know, a pigeon lands like on top of your shark. And I don't know why I threw a shark in there, because I thought, you know,
got
I
shark
think you know what I mean, the thing.
Get shark on the brain.
But yeah, something happens crazy in front of you, but otherwise it's going to take a ton of time to do a great Vine.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. You know, I think when Vine came out, a lot of people thought, okay, 6 seconds, this is going to make it easy for me to use Vine because it's such a small amount of time. But in fact, I think it makes it increasingly difficult. So interesting topic for sure. Pete, thank you so much for joining us today. It's great to see you. Sarah, as I mentioned in my email, we went to journalism
college
school together.
Buddies. Journalism school buddies. Yeah. That's
Kings
awesome.
Forever.
Woo. Yeah, Kings Forever. Graduated a long time ago.
Great to see you. Great to see you,
yeah.
Amber.
We've
kind of virtually interacted a lot over the years, but it's been a while since we've actually chatted, so this has been great.
Well, this has been fun. Pete. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you, too. Amber, should we take a short break before we get into some of our news of the week?
Let's do it.
This is something that... sort of I was going to say a plea. I don't know if plea is the right word, but we would like to ask nicely, if you are a fan of buying things on Amazon.com, and if you watch Twit, you probably are. I know that I am. You can support Twit with your Amazon purchases. What you do is just click through the Amazon banner at twit.tv/Amazon. That's easy, right? twit.tv/Amazon. And then you just shop as usual. It's a referral feed-based situation. So you can, you know, click through on some of these products. But really, it's just a place to start where you help, you know, kind of keep the lights on here at the Brick House by going about your Amazon buying business as you would normally. Hopefully that makes sense. Amber, I don't know about you, but I was talking to Chad Johnson on our new show Reddit Up yesterday that I buy kitchenware on Amazon because I don't like the idea of going to kitchen stores, retail, mm-hmm. brick-and-mortar kitchen stores, but it's a great place to get, you know, I get like a pan and then I get it shipped to Twit and it's, you know, it's just easy and I go a little nuts, of course. Front and center is Amazon's Fire Phone if you're interested in that, but look at all, yeah, the household appliance section of Amazon is actually where I feel like I end up spending a lot of time. But whatever you buy, if you just click through the Amazon banner of twit.tv/Amazon, you help us out and you don't have to really change your behavior otherwise at all. It's an easy way to support Twit. You can also bookmark the page and just click through anytime you're ready to go to Amazon.com. And there are links for Amazon UK and Amazon Canada as well. So once again, twit.tv/Amazon. And thanks for your support of the Social Hour. All right, so let's move on to Instagram and Bolt. It was kind of a weird rollout, Amber. There was a message that some Instagram users saw last week that appeared to be a trial download advertisement for a product called Bolt that doesn't exist yet. And people said, well, this is probably Instagram taking on Snapchat with messaging, because there was a little explainer there. But Facebook already has Slingshot, which is sort of supposed to take on Snapchat with photo messaging. But it's a real product, though. And it's launching, curiously, not in the U.S. It's New Zealand, Singapore, and what's the third place?
South Africa.
And South Africa. What do you think is going? What do you think they're doing?
Yeah, you know, I do agree. I mean, I think the strategy behind this is a little bit odd. I mean, you think about Slingshot and Facebook launching that, and like you said, and then all of a sudden Instagram coming out with this standalone app called Bolt. I mean, from an overall branding perspective, my first thought was Bolt is actually, I think, better branding and kind of a better name. But at the end of the day, it just seems like this is yet another move to try to compete with Snapchat out there. Not sure about their strategy for testing in these markets. Obviously, they are important markets for them, but it would be great if some of us in the rest of the world could perhaps try it out. It seems like the app, based on this article at least, is pretty limited right now. You know, they do talk about some of the functionality and say that you know you can't tell stories. It's really just about exchanging text, video, and images, and erasing those images essentially after you've sent them. And also mentioned that you can only import, I guess, about 20 contacts at a time. So when they say they are testing it out in these markets, it's a very slimmed down version of what you would expect from a new app.
I just don't even really know what Facebook's doing anymore. We've talked about the fact that Facebook is totally fine with unbundling its products. In fact, Messenger is officially not part of the Facebook mobile experience. Facebook wants you to use the Messenger app, a standalone app, and will actually dump you out of the regular Facebook app, not for desktop users, but for mobile users. That is, as promised, it's going to happen, and it started happening already. But, you know, there's only so much that Facebook can do, and Facebook is famous for cloning services that are trendy and already working and are popular with users to just sort of get a little bit of that market. Facebook Poke came and went.
Thankfully.
Yeah, Facebook Messenger is alive and kicking. I use it pretty often. But then you've got Slingshot. I don't know anybody who's using that, because it's sort of irksome to use, because you send something to me and then I have to send something to you in order to see what you sent to me. And so it's designed to keep us always connecting with each other, but nobody wants to be forced into that. So I don't know who's using Slingshot, but it's none of my friends. And then you've got Instagram saying, well, okay, maybe, you know, my best theory is maybe the Instagram private messaging feature, Instagram Direct, I think it's called, where I can send you specifically just you a photo or a video and we can talk about it kind of on the back channel. I don't really know anybody who's using that either. So maybe Bolt, which is a great name, is what Instagram feels like they should have done in the first place. Make it a different product altogether.
You know, maybe it could be just a feature within Instagram. And it's funny because I did, as we've talked about before, I jumped off Instagram for a while. Over the past 6 months, I've kind of jumped back into it. And I love the community there. But the more that I use their apps there, I have to say that, you know, they could really spend some more time innovating and coming up with new features and functionality. I mean, it's very limited. One of the things I love about Instagram is just the commenting system on commenting on other people's photos. But as far as replying and extending that conversation and building the community, I mean, nothing has really changed about it. So I would prefer as a consumer that instead of taking time to focus on a standalone app like Bolt, that they just improved the Instagram app, because I haven't seen much going on there over the past 6 months or year.
Yeah, I love Instagram. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I look at the app at least once a day, sometimes multiple times a day, and I try to upload as much as possible if I've got something good. But I really don't. I don't know how much you can mess with the Instagram experience, and that is sort of a good and a bad thing. I think that's why so many people are loyal to Instagram, and there's you know, you got a lot of great photographers and all that stuff. Something like Bolt is the almost the antithesis of what Instagram is built on. Mm-hmm. Sure, you can post anything you'd like on Instagram, but I think it's always focused on, this is a really cool photo that I took with my smartphone, and maybe I added a filter and changed the color a little bit, and I'm proud of it, and it's artsy, and I think that's what's always worked on Instagram, as long as you're not, you know, sort of a celebrity and famous for other things. Something like Bolt, any instant, real time, here, let me send you something that's more about what I'm doing right now, the moment, and not this carefully curated scene. I don't think that works on Instagram. I don't think that they can do that. So to have a standalone app makes sense, but there's just too many apps. I don't know.
I think even just like replying to a comment on Instagram, right? Like let's say 25 people commented on your Instagram photo, just being able to, you know, specifically reply to someone without writing their handle. I mean, there's just little things I think they can improve, but nonetheless, I love Instagram too. But if Bolt comes out, I'm not so sure that I'm going to be too hooked.
Yeah. I don't know either. You know, Amber, I don't think I've opened Snapchat in quite a bit as well, because nobody's sending me any. So I wonder about that one too. Of course, Snapchat, there was some talk yesterday that it may get a round of funding that would put it in the value range of $10 billion.
I saw that.
Only a few other startups even, you know, have crazy valuations like that. And I kind of think to myself, you know, I don't know. I liked Snapchat a lot. I don't have a problem with it. But if there's not a lot of activity on Snapchat, well, what is there really for me to do? I don't know. The ephemeral messaging thing is pretty unproven as a long-term model. So I know that there are a lot of imitators and competitors, but I'm not sure where any of these companies are going to be even in 2 years.
Yeah, and I just remembered I mentioned last week that we were going to have a guest on the show from a police department who's using Snapchat stories. So I'm trying to book them for next week. And the following week, I have booked someone from LinkedIn we have a story about LinkedIn coming up in just a couple of stories, but just wanted to mention that as well. So they will talk about how the police department is using Snapchat stories and give us another perspective on how people are using Snapchat today.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to throw this story in, Amber, really quickly, just because it made me chuckle this morning. You know how if you spend much time on Twitter, there's sort of a running joke because Uber, of course, the car ride service, is so popular and kind of becoming ubiquitous, at least in many metropolitan areas. Uber for snacks, Uber for dogs, Uber for haircuts. You know, it's something that I hear quite a bit because it's whenever you have a successful company, then another startup kind of wants to associate themselves. You know, it's like Uber for your mom, that sort of thing. Well, there is a new company, this is a real thing, called Ease, that wants to be the Uber of pot, as in marijuana, as in there would be a courier that would send that would basically bring this to you rather than you having to go to any one of the many dispensaries that you see, at least in the neighborhood that I live in. Medical marijuana dispensaries are currently legal, at least in the city of San Francisco. Amber, I don't know what to make of this. Is this just a blatant attempt to try to capitalize on the popularity of Uber, or can you see anyone actually using this?
I don't know. I kind of think it's a good idea, I have to say. I mean, one of the biggest arguments that I see people have when we talk about decriminalization of marijuana is people say, oh, you can't decriminalize because people will drive when they're high and they'll be smoking and driving. So anything that gets that out of the mix, I'm happy to see services that allow you to do that.
It's funny. Tim Foyle in our chat room says, the couriers are going to get robbed. Hopefully they won't have, you know, well-marked vehicles. And then Dexter says in our chat room, you know, what's next is a weed drone, because then you don't have to worry about couriers at all. It's sometimes I feel like, yeah, they're, you make some good points about why it would be good not to, actually, if you're the one who's picking up the marijuana, to be driving yourself. But sometimes I feel like these are just solving problems that aren't really big problems. And there's probably a niche market for all of this, but, and maybe it helps if you're embarrassed to be seen in public or you know, sort of participating. I'm just not sure.
But what about that community of people? I mean, it is specifically for medicinal marijuana. So you're assuming some of those people could legitimately be sick, right? So in that sense,
that too.
I mean, you're sick from cancer and you're in a bed and you need relief. I mean, I think you're right. It's a very small community right now, but I imagine there's a lot of everyday people who would also enjoy this service.
I think it probably depends on the city that you're in. And San Francisco is probably a great little breeding ground for
good
something like this. But anyway, it's Eaze, E-A-Z-E. They've got a website and everything. So I don't know. I got a little chuckle out of it this morning and I wonder if I will be, eating my words when it becomes an extremely popular product down the road. Hard to say.
It's hard to say.
Social's gotten weird, Amber. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But something that you mentioned a few minutes ago, LinkedIn. LinkedIn is always innovating. You got to give it to that company. And they've given mobile profiles a little bit of a, you know, a little facelift. They've gotten a little bit more visual. I don't know that I would ever call LinkedIn a super visual product, but it certainly has potential to be.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that they're trying to do based on this article is just to try to make it more visually appealing. And I think LinkedIn has a ton of room to grow when it comes to making the service as attractive, perhaps, as some of the other social services out there, because it's pretty corporate. It's pretty bland in some ways. So it looks like what they're trying to do is just make your profiles pop a little bit more, give you more opportunities to really tell your story about what you do professionally. And they're also doing something interesting as far as beefing up your connections or things that you have in common with other people on LinkedIn. So they're pushing forward that idea that it's all about the community you have on LinkedIn, not just the people you're connected to, but maybe it's a colleague of a colleague. So they're pushing that ahead in the mobile version of their app and just making some little slight changes. So nothing huge, but I think you're bang on when we talk about LinkedIn. They are always innovating. They're always coming out with new things, but they're like the turtle in the race, you know, just kind of slow and steady.
Gotta love LinkedIn. Gotta love. I was just actually on LinkedIn the other day. I was looking up a former colleague, and then all of a sudden I was like, oh, is he going to see that I did this? It wasn't anything bad, but it's like, I don't know what, I feel like it should be really, really clear. Hey, if you're, you know, logged in, or if you look at someone's full profile or whatever, this was on, you know, at least on the desktop version of LinkedIn, you should know that they'll see that you looked. Because I see when people look at my profile and I'm always sort of like, I wonder what spurred that moment. Did they get to be by accident or were they actually looking up my resume? So LinkedIn scares me a little bit these days and it probably shouldn't.
Well, it's one of those things, right? I had the same experience this morning. I wanted to reach out to someone on LinkedIn who I just had a conference call with, but all of a sudden I'm looking at her profile and I feel kind of creepy. Like, is she going to look at this and think, why is she stalking me on LinkedIn? And it puts you in an awkward situation, which is the perfect reason. And I'm sure this is why they've set it up this way, that you would want to pay for a pro account, although it's not cheap, but it's pretty smart marketing from their standpoint, because you just feel creepy if you don't have a pro account. So anyway, that's their strategy, and I'm sure it works for a lot of people.
Exactly. Yeah. You want to be invisible? You want to go incognito? Please pay us for a pro account. You get all these other perks, too. Good work, LinkedIn. Hey, we were talking about Vine with Pete, our guest, a few minutes ago. And you know, everybody kind of agreed that when a Vine is good, it's really good. It can be extremely creative and artsy or funny or whatever. So there's now a Vine film competition that Tropfest has put together. Amber, I don't know. Would you want to go to this? Would you want to go to a Vine film fest?
You know, I might, but I probably would prefer just to watch them online. I don't know if that makes me lazy, but Trop Vine, so this film festival for people who love Vine, it looks like they're doing a lot of the voting online. So they're trying to find a short list of the top 20 Vines out there. So I think the good part about it is you don't necessarily have to go. You could still kind of enjoy the process by seeing who gets shortlisted within the competition. But it's just another sign, Sarah. I mean, we didn't end up talking about Vine so much on the show. There's a Vine talent agency. There are Vine film festivals, and it is becoming a filmmaker's place, right? And I wonder if that does alienate the average consumer a little bit because of the pressure because of all these great 6-second videos.
Yeah, there were also I don't know if they even do this anymore, the Shorty Awards, and that was, you know, for
oh yeah, I think they do.
For, you know, it's, I feel like there's always a film, well, not film, there's always some sort of festival where you can win a prize that will sort of spin out of any service that's popular enough with people that, you know, it warrants that. I don't know. I don't take much stock in a lot of this stuff. If you win an award at the Trop Fest for best people's choice buy-in, it doesn't mean anything. Do you get more followers? I guess if you do, then it's all worth it. But I think really it's just sort of the bigger picture is people are recognizing that there is art being made online and in a variety of different mediums. And, you know, you don't have to do a feature film or a music video or something to have a lot of people say, hey, kudos to you. You're pretty good at this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think it's another sort of niche opportunity. And we're seeing this more and more with social networks. It's not about these mass audiences. It's about these really niche communities of people who have opportunity to potentially, you know, build a career around making these short little films. So in that sense, I think it is kind of interesting. But I'm still intimidated by Vine. I actually am working on a project right now where they asked me to make some Vines. So I got a lot to learn, Sarah.
Well, I look forward to them, Amber. I look forward to your Vines. I haven't made a Vine in a while. Although somebody did send me a looped Vine. The rapper Wiz Khalifa has a Vine account. And he had a funny little Vine where his dog was sleeping on a bunch of $100 bills. And he said something like, sleeping on them hunnets. And I watched it for like 10 minutes. So every once in a while, there's a Vine where I'm like, this is so funny. It's perfect. Yep. Doesn't happen that often, but it does.
Once in a while.
We don't have to watch that Wiz Khalifa Vine. Just, you know, look him up if you're interested. I'm not sure it's appropriate for the show. All right, let's move on to the app of the week, an app called Detour. Amber, you consistently amaze me with your ability to find apps that I've never heard of.
Well, this one is really interesting. This TechCrunch article talks about the app. I saw a few people talking about Detour, but then all of a sudden I looked at the headline and I thought, Andrew Mason, who's that? And of course, Andrew Mason is the founder of Groupon, and you remember his quirky departure from the company, and turns out this is his next big project. So he has created Detour, and the idea of this, it's basically an app that is like an audio tour app, so people who are traveling will be able to explore kind of the other side of cities that they're visiting, not the touristy stuff, but instead they can kind of go down the back alleys and into different parts of cities they wouldn't typically find.
I don't know. I love this. I think this is a great idea. I'm not exactly sure how many people are going to use it, but I like it. I love audio tours. I mean, anytime I'm in a museum, I always get the audio tour. There are certainly apps that exist out there that are designed to give you a walking tour of, you know, the sights of London or Tokyo or that sort of thing. But if it's some sort of crowdsourced way to submit a walking tour, yeah, I mean, my walking tour of San Francisco certainly wouldn't encompass a lot of, I think, what tourists would consider popular places, you know, Fisherman's Wharf and Pier 39, and it's, you know, it's touristy. But as someone who actually lives there, you know, I might say, I'm going to take you on a walking tour of these really cool graffiti alleys near my neighborhood, so you can kind of walk along with me on demand. Again, yeah, it's kind of a strange concept, but I love the idea.
Yeah, it's a neat idea. And if you watch the one that we were just playing that talks about Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, it looks like it's launching, the app is first launching in the Bay Area. And it does take you off the beaten tracks. So kind of fun. They'll be using a collection of independent producers, everyone from people who work in radio to individuals who want to be able to submit their own audio tours to the app. So it should be an interesting way for people to discover new places. I can only imagine that there are challenges with an app like this as far as everything from geolocation to thinking about you know, the pacing of the tour and the quality of all the submissions. But hey, the guy started Groupon, so he has a good track record.
You know, I think if Detour wanted, well, I'm sure they're way ahead of me. But I think that Detour would really flourish. Yeah, exactly. Not everybody can just make a great audio tour. It just doesn't work that way. But Detour could really flourish by partnering up with, again, YouTube stars, people who have familiar voices, because it's all audio-based, right? So you're not, there's nothing to see, so it sort of seems like, ooh, this is a model that could scale easily. But people that you enjoy listening to, and you think, ooh, you know, someone like iJustine, who is, you know, very popular with a lot of people, and she has a ton of, you know, followers and people who are part of her audience. I'd love to know, you know, what her, like...
That's a great idea.
Yeah, her Hollywood routine is. Not that she necessarily wants everybody to be at the same, you know, coffee bean that she is every morning, but I think that there is a lot of online celebrity that they could really leverage, or, you know, celebrities in general, just to kind of get a sense of, you know, how your favorite people go about their day in particular cities or you know, wine countries or other places that are considered destinations.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, it'd be fun, right? I think she's from Pittsburgh. So with iJustine, for example, maybe it wasn't where she lives right now, but maybe where she's from and all the places that she loved going to when she lived there. So it could get interesting, I think, focusing on the online celebrity side of things. So who knows what will happen? You know, he's such an interesting entrepreneur in so many different ways. So I'm sure we're going to hear more about Detour. Won't be the end of it.
You know, Groupon, it's easy to sort of be like, oh, Groupon. But, you know, it wasn't very long ago where Groupon was like, it was like the future of daily specials and deals. And, you know, I understand that it still exists, but it's had a bit of a fall from grace. You know, obviously Mason was pushed out. And, the company has had some, you know, starts and stops. But that company was absolute innovation and also launched a lot of competitors as well. I mean, the Groupon model is alive and kicking. I think it's just it's people have found it's hard to be sustainable because it's working with, you know, so many small businesses who say, well, the Groupon wasn't really worth it for me. I don't know if I really want to go through this, but you know, he's obviously got some interesting out of the box ideas.
Yeah, he definitely does. And speaking of out-of-the-box ideas for our social marketing spotlight of the week, this is just a fun story. You know, oftentimes airlines and financial institutions and telcos, we beat up on them online and they most often deserve it. But here's a fun little marketing campaign from TD Bank, which is a Canadian bank. And a friend of mine sent this to me a while ago, I guess in the past week. And they did this campaign similar to that WestJet campaign that we showed off, Sarah, not that long ago during holiday season when WestJet gave a bunch of gifts out to some of unsuspecting passengers. This is the same idea. So TD, they had these automatic thanking machines. In the videos, what they do is they are giving away different things, everything from money to prizes to tickets to go to sunny, warm destinations. So they surprise all of their customers, a bunch of them, and they shared the videos on YouTube. So it's a warm and fuzzy side of a bank.
I love this. This is, you know, it's. I don't go to ATM machines that often anymore because who needs money? But I love the idea that you could, you know, it's kind of like Cash Cab, right? That show where you get in a taxi and all of a sudden you have the opportunity to get some trivia right and win some money. I like this. You know, it's the golden ticket of ATMs. It's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a fun idea, and they've been getting a lot of positive attention online and just a different spin. I mean, I'm a fan, whether people think it's cheesy or not, of just big companies kind of giving back and showcasing that side of them and doing things like this and doing more of this stuff. So a fun little campaign. I'm sure a lot of people will be inspired by it.
Yeah, like, you know, it's great. I hope these are all real videos that we're seeing in their little promo video that shows who won something. But everybody's happy. You know, you get flowers, you get some money, you get a toy. I think it's great. Whoever thought of this is extremely smart. You know, are they really going to get new customers out of this? Well, probably not. But it certainly helps. Yeah, that loyalty with the customers that they do have. If an ATM machine gives me flowers, I'm not switching banks.
Yeah, and I mean, it's that element of surprise. And I think that's one thing when people are doing social media marketing that they forget about is that people love being surprised with things that make them happy. I mean, it's such a simple idea, but it's so rare that we really see that. So thumbs up to them.
Logan 5 in our chat room says, I want to see a puppy jump out of the hatch.
That would be good.
That would be good and possibly an irresponsible gift.
Oh, yes. Good point.
I always wonder about, when people surprise other people with, like, I give you a puppy for our anniversary. Yeah, and I'm like, it seems like a personal decision. You probably don't want to hoist a pet onto somebody else who didn't know that they were about to get one.
Bad idea.
But, I think TD probably knows better. We got an email from Kristen, who writes in response to last week's show, episode 172, and she said, hearing your commentary about how happy users are on the social network, we had noted that Pinterest users in a poll were basically happier than any other social network, and Amber and I thought a little bit about why that would be. Kristen says, I think you have a valid point about how it's hard not to be happy with Pinterest because it's so pretty. But also for me, it's ease of use. Pinterest is easy to use. It's easy to find things that you like. It's easy to know when you're up to date. The main feed is in chronological order, unlike Facebook's insane newsfeed algorithm. It's easy to search. It's just easy. Kristen says, whereas Facebook, even if I remember who posted something, I still might not find it on their profile page. The newsfeed is frustrating. I see the same posts over and over. Sometimes I'm not interested in them. And I see nothing from certain friends and pages. I think Kristen has a point, Amber. Pinterest is just more focused. And I think for a lot of people, you want it to do one thing and do it well.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy, and most people love images and it's just simple. And, I think it's one of those social networks we're going to see around for a really long time because people who love it absolutely love it. Based on if you watch the show last week, you'll see some stats about that, too.
Absolutely. So that was email from Kristen. We don't really have time for more emails, but we did get quite a bit. We will do our best to have more of your responses in next week's show. But in the meantime, if you have ideas for guests that you'd love to see Amber and I talking to in the future, if you have feedback on anything that we've discussed, you see a new service or app, you've got a gripe with Twitter, any of that stuff that applies to all of these social topics we talk about, we would love to hear from you. The social hour at twit.tv is how you email us. 2626 social, 2626 SOCIAL is our voicemail. It's a Google Voice inbox, so Amber and I won't pick up, but we'd love for you to leave us a 30-second message or shorter or a video of some kind. And of course, throughout the week, Amber and I scour Twitter to try to find all of the best information, not just on social stories, but feedback from you to try to build into our next show. So thanks in advance, everybody. All right, before we end the show, Amber, it is Rad or Fad time, and I don't even know how to pronounce the name of this service.
I know. I'm in the exact same boat. So basically, I want to call it Bubble WS, and I don't know what else to call it as far as how to pronounce it. So we'll call it bubblews.com. And this is getting a lot of attention online. And I don't know if it's really warranted, but nonetheless, the idea of this is it's a social network that pays its users. So essentially, as you post photos and people like your photos, you will earn money. Now, it's very little money. There aren't that many specifics in this article about how much. I see some writing here that it's about, maybe a penny a like. So you're not going to make a ton off of this. But the founders who built this social network believe that people who are contributing content should, in fact, be paid. They say they have about 300,000 users. What do you think, Sarah?
I hate it. I hate it, Amber. I don't like the idea of monetarily incentivizing people to write. I think that you end up getting bad quality. It's content for the wrong reasons. I just don't, especially since, as you noted, you're not going to get rich this way.
No.
So it seems like something that will be gamed. We're looking at an example that's a recipe for a particular kind of soup, which actually looks pretty good. But it's like, are you posting that because you really like the recipe, or are you posting that because you want a few bucks? I just think in general, and yes, there are some exceptions, but in general, if you're, you know, unless that's your job and that's your livelihood and, you know, you're a writer for a living, you end up getting a lot of kind of junk from people who, again, are just looking for a quick buck. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm being really pessimistic.
No, I think it's a total fad. And I feel like they, you know, they're getting a lot of attention because people, I mean, it makes for a great headline, right? And people think, oh, getting paid to post on a social network, all of a sudden I can make money. But like you said, I mean, the truth is you're not going to make much money. It changes, I think, the quality of the relationships entirely. And I think at some point people should be paid for content. But when it comes to social networks where you're just talking about likes and general interactions, I mean, you really shouldn't be getting paid for that stuff. It doesn't make any sense. And it definitely doesn't make the internet a better place. So I think it's a big fat fad.
I think it's a big fat fad too. And you hit it right on the nail. It doesn't make the internet a better place. The internet is already full of, you know, a lot of stories, you know, quote unquote stories, original content that's designed to sort of confuse people. It's like kind of SEO junk. Yeah. And even, you know, tech blogs, well, lots of different blogs, but tech blogs are the blogs that I end up reading the most, are constantly accused of, oh, this is just some sort of a paid advertisement that's designed to look like a product review, that type of thing. There's already so many gray lines there. I hate to think that we'd have to ask ourselves any more than we already do, is this a paid thing or does this person really mean it? Because again, yeah, your motivation, when motivated by money, it can make you say all sorts of things.
Yeah.
I don't like it. Not a fan. Big fat fad.
If someone who's listening or watching uses it and we are totally off base, we'd love to hear that side of the story. But at first glance, it just it doesn't seem like it has a long-term future.
No, I don't think so. And yes, if you disagree with us, we would love to hear why. We welcome a good old-fashioned critique of our radar fads. And even if you have radar fad ideas for us, do let us know as well. If you're sort of on the fence about something, Amber and I would love to take it apart and figure out what we think about it. All right, Amber, well, that does it for this episode of The Social Hour. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. Reminder that we are live on Thursdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And of course, if you miss a live show or you just prefer to watch us on demand at your leisure, you can always go to twit.tv/TSH, subscribe to the show there. That's the easiest way to just get the show delivered to you without you having to think about it. But of course, you can go to any individual episode as well. Click on the episode. We've got our show notes there. We've got our video embedded. Had a great interview last week with front CEO Mathilde Colon.
She was great, yeah.
I loved it. Yeah, she was amazing. In fact, Amber, I've been kind of thrilled with my experience with that service over the last week or so because I'm trying to road test it. So anyway, if you missed that, it was a wonderful interview, and we've got, as Amber mentioned, some good stuff coming up as well.
Yeah, we definitely do. So next week we'll be talking to a police department about how they use Snapchat stories. And the following week we have a LinkedIn expert on the show. And I'm super excited about that because we have talked, I don't know, maybe for years about how to do a better job on LinkedIn. We finally have someone who's going to come on the show and help all of us.
Excellent. Well, thanks everybody for being with us on The Social Hour. Until next week, I am Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.